This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes, we have three guests during hour number two coming up.
Wow.
John Rittman,
look at that.
The Clemson softball rock and roll team coming up in about 15 minutes or so, actually in half an hour or so. And Paige Madden from the University of Virginia swim and diving ACC champs, she makes another appearance. She joined us about a year ago and is the MVP.
Right.
So we look forward to having both of John and Paige on the program. But right now, Myron Metcalf rejoins us. He joined us last month. He did such a great job, we decided to bring him back. Myron, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Always a pleasure. We get a little bit deeper into February and already some interesting storylines. One's got to be, number one, the Blue Bloods had a great weekend, but Duke continued it last night. They are starting to look the part, aren't they?
Oh, they are. They're starting to look the part. Matthew Hurt is looking like the ACC Player of the Year, a strong candidate, if not the top candidate. They're winning, playing team ball after that three-game losing streak. And here's the other thing, right? If you're the NCAA tournament, if you're the officials with that tournament, you're not going to say it publicly. But you're excited about what Duke is doing right now. You hope this momentum continues. Trust me.
Now, wait a second, Myron. You're saying there's a business aspect to this entire operation?
All I'm saying is there are probably some guys pumping their fist a little bit after that win last night. They won't do it publicly, but they're excited about the possibility.
I thought it was all about quad one and quad two and body of work and blind resumes. You're telling me that's all nonsense? That's fantasy land? Is that what you're telling me?
Listen, if Duke is on the bubble, there's going to be a bouncer at the door who kind of waves them into the ahead of the line. Like everybody else. If they're on the bubble, there's a good chance they're going to get in. That's all.
That's funny.
The velvet rope of the selection committee. Little did we know. Sir, you come right in this way, sir. You come right in. All right. So, Myron, Josh Pastner was on with us yesterday. And bless him now. He said every year 9, 10, or 11 ACC teams ought to go to the tournament just because of the league and the grind and everything else. And we appreciate the politicking and the stumping for his league. And his team in particular. Joe Lenardi's had 6 on his list for a long time. He said 5, maybe 7. I'm trying to make heads or tails of like Louisville and Syracuse. We've talked about Duke. I mean, Georgia Tech. I mean, I think the differential in the number of games you play in the league and who you play, that's got to impact. How do you think the committee's going to handle that? Because I have no feel for it.
Well, first with Josh Pastner saying, 9, 10, 11 every year, that's a good thought. You know, we've all been in the pandemic watching a lot of Disney Plus stories about fairy tales, and that is a fairy tale if he thinks 11 teams are getting in this year. But I do think North Carolina and Duke make it interesting. It's an interesting conversation. Louisville is a team to watch. Like, Louisville to me is the team where you go, okay, if you look at what they have ahead, they could play their way in to a respectable seed. They could also lose their next 4 games. The game against Notre Dame is the most important game on their schedule after what happened against North Carolina over the weekend. You have to win that game, and Notre Dame is a really good team. Notre Dame doesn't turn the ball over. Louisville doesn't force a lot of turnovers in league play. So that could be the perfect matchup for Mike Brace's team. And then from there, their schedule gets even tougher. So I do wonder what happens with Notre Dame. Duke, there's a lot of momentum their way, and that's going to be a team where what do they do in the ACC tournament? North Carolina kind of in a similar position. Syracuse, it seems like, may need a miracle, though, to kind of get in through the ACC tournament, winning a bunch of games, maybe losing in the title game or something like that. But it's going to be interesting to see how the committee looks at how many games teams have played. I think if you look at their first reveal, Baylor was still a number one seed, and they hadn't played in 2 weeks. Now it's closer to a month that Baylor hasn't played. And that hasn't changed. Michigan was a number one seed. They were on a 3-week pause. So I don't think number of games are going to matter as much as people think to the committee. It'll be quality of wins like it is most years.
Myron, yesterday we just celebrated the 41-year anniversary of the Miracle on Ice, which also took place in New York. You talked about another miracle for Syracuse. It seems like every year we get to late February, early March, and Syracuse and the bubble are just attached, aren't they? And just, I mean, why is that? It just, I mean, every year we talk about Syracuse and the bubble.
Well, I was told about a decade ago, Jim Boeheim purchased 10 acres on the bubble. So, I mean, he lived there. He just goes there every February, you know, and he just camps out. But this is the story of Syracuse. And I think if you're a Syracuse fan, you almost enjoy this because you've been here so many times. I mean, Syracuse lost to, I think, a Duke team that is just playing better than most teams in this league, maybe better than every team in this league not named Florida State. But if you're Q's, you have to wonder why you continuously get into this situation. Now, a big part of that, let's be honest, is every year Virginia, Duke, and North Carolina are really good. And then there are probably three or four or five other teams that are pretty good as well in this league. So it's not like this is happening for no reason. Syracuse in a different league wouldn't be in this situation.
All right. Myron, Virginia loses at Cameron Saturday night. I thought Duke was really good defensively in the ball game throughout. Has Tony Bennett got a bigger concern here because his team has shown offensive firepower and maybe not as strong defensively, but it's still a really good basketball team? Does he kind of let that 40 minutes go, or has he got something he's got to deal with here?
I've learned a long time ago not to doubt Tony Bennett in Virginia, not to take one game and make grand assumptions. That's still a team with Jay Huff and Sam Hauser and you know, some of the best players in this league. That's still a team that's going to defend you and make it difficult for every team in the country to score. I just think they played a Duke team that's playing really well. Here's the Duke story that nobody's talking about, okay? During that three-game losing streak, they played teams that shot the ball from the perimeter in ways they hadn't before. Miami made 54% of its threes in that first game during that three-game losing streak for Duke. They're a 29% shooting team from the three-point line. North Carolina made 67% of their threes. They're a 31% shooting team. Notre Dame made 44% of their threes. They do shoot pretty well. But if you look at the numbers, Duke has been playing teams that are shooting very well from the three-point line. If you believe the analytics, that's not something that usually lasts. And that's really not something you can contain. Teams get hot, they get hot. Mm-hmm. But now teams are starting to cool off and shoot closer to their average, and that's working in Duke's favor. These teams aren't the Golden State Warriors anymore from the three-point line, and now things are starting to tighten against this Duke team.
While all this has been going on, it seems like Clemson and Virginia Tech have been sitting on the couch eating popcorn, right? Mm-hmm. Watching everybody else play. Myron, just kind of crystal ball what you think Virginia Tech and Clemson will give you moving forward throughout the rest of the regular season.
You know, it's hard to say in terms of Clemson going forward, in part because, you know, there's just so many ambitious teams in this league that they have to deal with. But their non-conference schedule, having wins against teams like Alabama, they're going to be in good shape. They've proven what they can do outside league play, and that's what you're going to have to conquer once you get to the tournament. I think Virginia Tech continues to be really dangerous as well. Like, Mike Young should be getting more consideration, not just for ACC Coach of the Year, but for National Coach of the Year. We've had a lot of Juwan Howard conversations, a lot of conversations about Chris Holtmann and other guys around the country, Mark Few, Scott Drew, obviously, coaching undefeated teams. But in terms of a guy who's just been doing this from the ground up, Mike Young has been incredible and turned Virginia Tech into not just a team you don't want to deal with in the ACC tournament, but I think a team that if you see them in your bracket in March, you don't want to face that team. And I think that, to me, just says a lot about how good they have been. I think going forward, those will be two teams that get into the tournament. And I think those will be two teams that you won't want to see in that first round because you know what they're capable of.
You know what, Myron? It's interesting when you talk about Mike Young, and Mark and I have talked about this before. It's amazing that as good a job as he did at Wofford and as pesky as they got in the NCAA tournament, including bumping a couple people off on a couple separate occasions, right? That it still seemed like it took crawling over heaven and earth to get him the Virginia Tech job. I mean, it's amazing how ironical it is that here's a guy who's from Radford, grew up, went to Emory and Henry, and ended up in Blacksburg to coach, when there were a lot of schools that just didn't want to pull the trigger on Mike Young on jobs he wanted at Power 5 level before this time.
Yeah, the great benefit of being a great mid-major coach is, you know, you can keep that job forever. The challenge is people kind of put you in a box. It's kind of like being a great high school football coach and winning 4 or 5 state titles and trying to get a college job. That's not an easy transition. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens to coaches at the mid-major level. Everybody who knows basketball understood who Mike Young was, what he was doing at Wofford. It just took Virginia Tech in that situation there to realize, okay, bring him up. I just wish it would happen more often because you got so many guys at that level who are coaching 2- and 3-star guys, and they're getting them into the tournament, and they're winning games, and they're competitive. Imagine what they can do with the bigger budget, the bigger platform. So to me, it's surprising that more schools didn't do what Virginia Tech did and go with a guy like Mike Young, understanding what he's been at different levels. But I'm glad he's getting his opportunity now. I'm telling you, Mike Young, it should be on every Coach of the Year list in America. He's done a remarkable job.
Myron, to that effect, Boston College is going to be looking for a head basketball coach. They want to get in the basketball business. Pat Kraft has indicated that he wants to be serious and do what it takes to be competitive in the ACC. And realistically, BC hasn't been there since Al Skinner took him to the title game in his first year in the ACC. Who are guys that you would think might be available to BC who'd want to sign up for, you know, the strong Boston passion of basketball?
So, yeah, I'm not very good at necessarily the candidate game, but I'll tell you this. I think it's admirable that BC wants to build that product, right? The challenge in a league like the ACC is you can be pretty good, but the record doesn't reflect it simply because you're playing in such a tough league. It's like having $1 million mm-hmm. house and you look down the street and everyone's got $5 million houses. It's not that you don't have a great home. It's that you're just in a really wealthy neighborhood. And I think that's the challenge with BC. At the end of the day, the first thing that BC has to establish is what does it think it can be? What's realistic? And a lot of times you see teams make moves and make decisions based on these ideas that aren't real, based on theories about what they can be, and it's just not realistic. You're not going to be Duke and Virginia and North Carolina most years. And then you got to deal with Florida State. And then Notre Dame and Mike Bray are going to have some good seasons too. And guess what? NC State's going to be good. You got Mike Young coming up in the league. Clemson has proven to you what they can be. Where do you go if you're BC? I think the idea of turning BC into a school that gets into the tournament every few years is competitive is great. But the idea of this contending just doesn't feel realistic. So I think they need to go with a young candidate with a lot of energy who can hit the recruiting trail pretty hard. But I do think expectations matter a whole lot because I think it's unfair to candidates when you come in and the idea is let's change everything. Well, you're playing Duke and North Carolina and Virginia every year. That's not an easy thing to do.
Myron, we've gone 14 minutes into this interview, and I don't believe we've asked you a question about the team right now that's on top of the standings, which is almost par for the course because we talk about Duke and Carolina and Virginia and Louisville and Syracuse, and yet the old guy down there, the 38-year-old head coach at Florida State, all he does is win ball games and just kicks butt. He has guys go to the NBA draft. Ain't no big deal. We're going to reload, and we're going to hit you with 15 dudes that can play. How about where Florida State now finds itself? The committee unveils its list of 16 teams. Nowhere to be found is Florida State. You know Leonard Hamilton had a smile on his face and said, thank you very much. They absolutely woodshed Virginia. They're healthy for the most part after another COVID pause. Seems like sky is the limit for a Florida State team that very well could be one of those teams that's not named Gonzaga or Baylor or Michigan or Ohio State or Illinois that could very well end up in Indianapolis and in the Final Four. They're that good.
Yeah, I mean, Leonard Hamilton lives here, right? This is kind of what happens to his teams. This is kind of what happens to projections with his teams. They're sort of forgotten, but I think they're one of the top 10 most dangerous teams going into the postseason. Leonard Hamilton never gets the respect that he deserves. You wonder if that could change this year. People forget, if we have a tournament last year, Florida State's a Final Four team. I mean, that's a team that could have competed anybody, and it was taken away from them. So you wonder what they do this year. Here's what I love about Leonard Hamilton's team, is that when you talk to players, and I have talked to players on that team, their focus is on what they know they can do. They don't get caught up in everything else. I can tell you that during the pause – when they were trying to figure out just how to stay in shape, which is the most difficult thing for teams in this situation. They had senior leaders who were setting up workouts in the parking lots on campus, and they were running the parking lot to stay in shape, to get ready to play all these teams that they got to face here down the stretch. That's a team that doesn't need any outside noise or help to understand what it can be, and I think that's what you have to appreciate. But Florida State's going to get your respect one way or the other, before the game or after they beat you by 10 points. It's your choice.
Yeah, 100% right.
Yeah. Hey, Myron, always appreciate the time. Stay well, and hopefully we get to the tournament and the bouncer lets Duke in.
Let me in VIP. That's all I want. Just give me in VIP. I'll be fine.
You bet. Myron Metcalf, you can read his work at ESPN.com. Does a great job covering college basketball. We appreciate his time. Don't forget, we got women's basketball coming up for you on ACC Network. We had a game last night, Notre Dame with a road win at Pittsburgh, and we got a double dip Thursday. Virginia Tech Clemson starts our coverage at 6. At 8 o'clock, it's Boston College at Syracuse right here on ACC Network and always streaming on the ESPN app. We're going to carry this conversation to the historical ramifications of how your team fares and what it means at the ACC tournament and beyond. The February perspective you might need for your school or the league when Packer and Durham continues.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Many thanks to Myron Metcalf. You got John Rittman coming up here in about 10, 15 minutes. Softball coach at Clemson. Mm-hmm. And Paige Madden, all-world swimmer, UVA, makes her return to Packer and Durham. But we got a little intel, Wes, for folks that regardless of what team you root for in the ACC, we're coming down the stretch and you're thinking, man, I might be a little nervous about my club. How's that going to look in terms of postseason play? So
right.
The real smart people put together some research on this, and it might be worthy of just addressing that now just to calm everybody's nerves a little bit.
Well, there are three schools probably. You know, you got Virginia, two straight losses at Florida State and at Duke, right? Cavaliers are back on the floor tomorrow hosting NC State here on ACC Network. Then you've got Louisville, blowout at the hands of Carolina, coming off a pause. Virginia Tech, already with a loss in February, long pause, right? Hokies back tonight against Georgia Tech. The good news here, I think, is that historical precedent still shows that you can have postseason success, right? Both in the conference tournament and maybe in the NCAA tournament. Even if there's a bump or a blip or a hurdle at the end of the regular season. And here's what we've done. Our staff has put together our crack research, right, Pac? Here are the ACC tournament champions over the last 5 years and just kind of where they are. We'll go back to 2019. We'll take Duke. Did lose three of the last six games going down the stretch, including North Carolina, number three in the country at the time. But they still recovered and had a pretty successful year, right? Went 8-3, February, March regular season. Won the ACC tournament in Charlotte, beat Florida State, right? Not bad.
No, correct. True. Is this still the true-false segment from Dish? True.
No, we're just...
No, you're right.
Virginia. Virginia went 7-1 the year before, February and March. Only blemish. Overtime loss at home to Virginia Tech. Great game on a Saturday night on ESPN. Same for the Blue Devils 2017, 6-3 in February and March, lost three of the last four, including losing at Syracuse and losing at Miami. Sound familiar? And by the way, lost to North Carolina. Still successful. Carolina in 2016, 6-4. Now, they had a few more losses, including a two-game losing streak at Louisville and Notre Dame. Tar Heels still recovered. Their last loss, though, was to Virginia on February 27th. They lost 79-74. You go back to Notre Dame all the way to 2015. Remember Steve Vastoria hits the shot on a Saturday night to win the ACC championship for Notre Dame, they went 6-2 down the stretch. They lost by 30 to Duke and then lost to Syracuse at home on February 24th. Still managed to do it. So it's not an indicator of what your March is going to be like in terms of postseason. Now, what about teams that went further in the NCAA tournament? Because, Pac, you know this. We've gotten into a little bit of a habit in the ACC where your team that might end up cutting the nets down in April doesn't necessarily win the ACC tournament, right?
Correct.
So that success can be counterintuitive sometimes, right?
True. But this should turn into a
I like your style.
Sponsored by Dish. True. You know, Wes, all those teams that you just rattled through, all of them were comfortably in the tournament, in my opinion.
Right.
The thing that I always find intriguing about February streaks is there's always a team, whether it be the ACC or somewhere else, and normally everybody's got one. Mm-hmm. There's a team that maybe is kind of piddling around and you don't think they're going anywhere fast, and all of a sudden they catch it. They catch fire in February, middle of February. They win a game. Next thing you know, they put together a nice winning streak, and they have a good week. Mm-hmm. Now they put 2 weeks together, and all of a sudden, they play with their hair on fire in March and make runs. To me, those are always the teams to keep an eye on. I still think the league's got six or seven teams that are going to be in the dance. I do. And maybe I'll be proven to be 100% wrong, and it's only five, whatever. But I still think there's six or seven in this league right now that I think are going to be in the tournament. The question is, can somebody catch fire and go bonkers?
Sure.
That, to me, is always worth keeping an eye on. And you know, you're kind of watching Duke do that. Let's be honest. 3 weeks ago, none of us were real high on where Duke was. Duke was a 500 team that just seemingly just couldn't quite put anything together. They're playing terrible defense, which we talked about. And there just wasn't any sign of life out of Durham. All of a sudden, here we are talking about, man, other than Florida State, anybody want to play Duke? Nope. It's weird how it works. There's always a team.
Right.
I would tell you in the SEC, there's another blue blood, Kentucky, that has been flat out miserable for the most part. All of a sudden, the last week or so, and they went to Tennessee, they're starting to put together some wins, and you just wonder if it clicks. I think everybody in the country, no matter what league you love to follow, has one of those teams that you kind of you put on the back burner, you kind of forget about them, and all of a sudden they find it. And you go, man, I'll tell you what now. Mm-hmm. I know we got X, Y, and Z, but you better be careful with this team. So that to me is always the intriguing part of ACC hoops, is I think we've got a handful of teams that we really feel comfortable about as far as the postseason goes. They're going to be in it.
Yeah.
See what kind of run they make. But who can catch fire? That's why I like a game tonight, like Georgia Tech tonight has one of those games to me that if they win this game on the road, and I don't know what the Hokies are going to look like. I have no idea. But it really doesn't matter if Georgia Tech wins the game. Hey, it's all about beating somebody who's ranked in the top 20 if you're Georgia Tech. Is that a catalyst for a team like Georgia Tech, who's now in the top 50 of the net, to go on one of those runs? They've got leadership. They've got old dudes. They've got guys who can make threes. Alvarado's a great leader. Wright's been terrific inside. DeVoe was on with us the other day. Usher's giving you some, you know, so I'm always intrigued by those kind of teams when we do these kind of lists, because it really the top group, they're going to get to the postseason. You want to be playing good basketball, but who else can join that mix?
Well, and here's the other thing, and I'm going to go back to the tournament itself, okay? And all we've got to do is go back 2 years ago to when Virginia lost in the semifinals in Charlotte to Florida State. I mean, Mark, you and I were there that night, right? That's right. I mean, they lose in the semifinals to Florida State, and Virginia goes on to win the national championship, okay? So North Carolina, you go back to 2005, they lost to Georgia Tech in the semifinals, ended up winning the national championship. In St. Louis. I mean, you can go through this. I mean, even teams that don't win the national title don't necessarily win the ACC tournament. And I'm not saying that the tournament's not important, because some have insinuated that in the past. But I think you've got to look at the way certain teams build their team. And it's okay to say, you know what? Hey, we didn't win the ACC tournament. We didn't have our game that night. But we know, to your point, we're going to the NCAA tournament. And we have to capture the momentum. Virginia did as good a job at that after losing to Florida State in the semifinals at Spectrum Center in Charlotte a couple of years ago, because when they got to the NCAA tournament, that was Virginia the way we thought we'd see Virginia. It was actually the Virginia we thought we were going to see in Charlotte. And then Devin Vassell hit two big shots in the second half to beat them in the semifinals. Think about Carolina and Duke that year, too, Pac. Carolina and Duke played a great semifinal game that Duke won in Charlotte. Carolina was able to kind of win a couple games, but Duke never got close. Neither did Carolina to that effect, right? I mean, they never got to the Final Four that year. And they were both teams. Carolina lost to Auburn. Duke lost in the Elite Eight that year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
So it's... All right. True. Well done. When we come back, by the way, more history as we work our way to Greensboro on both the ladies and the men's side for the postseason basketball events. We'll transition to softball. John Rittman, year two. Got to be a little different than year one, because year one got started and then it didn't. We'll talk to the coach of the Tigers softball team live next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday, right here on ACC Network. 844-SAY-ACCN. All right, let's go down to Clemson, South Carolina, because it is softball season. Mm. We had some of the best of the worst of the weekends, which had some Clemson softball highlights tied in on this whole routine. John Rittman's running the show. It is year two of Tigers softball. Coach, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, fellas. We're doing great. Sun's shining and going to have some good weather today.
That would be good. It's year two, but it really kind of still feels like year one, I suppose, right? After last year, you get this thing off the ground and we get about a month into the season and then, bam, everything comes to a screeching halt. Does it feel like you're starting basically back to square one again?
You know, we got through half the season last year. We had played half our games, but yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people are calling it year 1.5, but we're going with year two, and definitely excited that we're playing softball again, and certainly have some protocols that we got to follow to be able to do this. But very, very grateful to be playing the game we love this time of year.
All right, so John, what did you learn in the half that season a year ago that you were able to kind of say, okay, now we have a feel for A, B, and C, so when we get to go back, we're going to do this? I mean, what were the key elements there?
Well, first of all, I think we proved that we're a pretty good offensive team. We can score some runs, and that's always a big part of the game. We had some young pitching that needed to mature, and so last year was an opportunity for them to get some experience. And then our defense, you know, I think that was probably the weakest part of our game last year, and we've improved that quite a bit this year. So, you know, from just being a new program and learning the ins and outs of playing at this level with a new group of players was challenging at times, because there was no history, there was nothing we could draw from, and we had some great leadership within our program, and certainly at the college level, you know, you're always looking for your upperclassmen, and we had a few upperclassmen that were leaders, but we also had some young players step up and lead by example. So really like the makeup of our team. We brought in some new freshmen this year that are helping out tremendously, and you know, like I said, year one was a challenge in many different ways, but it was a blessing to get those games in and prepare us for this year.
John, it seems to me that when you start a whole new campaign, a whole new program, literally from ground zero, which is what you did, it just seems common sense would tell you, well, it's going to take a couple of years until you kind of get number one recruiting and you get your players in there. You kind of figure out what the lay of the land is, stadium, facilities. But man, it just seems like you guys have been playing for a decade. How did you make that transition seem so seamless to say, hey, basically 14 months ago, there wasn't a softball team.
Well, I think first it started in recruiting. You know, you try to recruit the best student athletes that you can, and we really focused on the character part of that and recruiting good kids and kids that wanted to come in and play right away because there was no team, obviously. And then kids that wanted to compete. And we knew we were going to be a first-year program, and we sold it. But we also sold the fact that we wanted to kind of shock the world a little bit. We wanted to say, hey, just because we're a first-year program doesn't mean we can't play the game and go out and compete and win games. And I think that's what everybody bought into. And just the competitive spirit of our players and their will to build this thing and be pioneers, and it's worked out so far, and certainly we have a challenging schedule ahead of us, but I love the way our team plays and competes, and like I said, we really have focused on our core values and our beliefs and how we want to go about our business day to day, both on and off the field, and we'll let the wins and losses kind of take care of themselves, and I think that's taken a little pressure off of everybody and, you know, let us play loose and have fun.
Well, you got into the ACC pod last weekend, 3 wins over Georgia Tech. I know Valerie Cagle, again, is an important piece of what you're doing. So what do we know so far through the first 8 ball games about this year's Tiger team? And are you seeing some of the some of that development you'd hoped for?
Definitely. We started the pod weekend with Virginia Tech, and they're a very complete team, pitching, defense, hitting, and I believe they're ranked 14th in the country, and I think they're better than that. And, you know, for us to start ACC play against them and get our feet wet was a huge advantage. We saw some great pitching. Our pitchers saw some great hitters. So that really prepared us for Georgia Tech. And we were able to take a game from Virginia Tech, which is huge for our young program, you know. And we seemed to get up and play well against these ranked teams. And last year it was Georgia. This year it was Virginia Tech, and we got a few more down the road here. But I really saw a lot in our team. You know, I our pitching staff, we have a staff this year that we can really rely on, and each pitcher kind of complements each other well. Of course, we have Valerie Cagle, who is a complete pitcher. She's got velocity. She's got a good off-speed pitch. She's a great defensive fielding pitcher. And then we have a couple of freshmen that have really blossomed this year, and left-handed pitcher Millie Thompson and right-hander Reagan Spencer, who have given us some really good outings this year. And then, of course, we had the 2 freshmen last year that are super freshmen, so to speak, and Emma Whitfield and Logan Camel. So I like the way all of our pitchers kind of complement each other. Our pitching coach Kyle Jameson does a great job with them. And we have another freshman pitcher, Carson Puckett, who hadn't seen time yet, but she's another option that we can go to. In our ACC games this year, you know, we're playing a 4-game series versus a 3-game series in 3 days. So we're going to need the depth in pitching. I like our offense. We have a freshman center fielder who's a really dynamic player, Mackenzie Clark. And I think you'll see a lot of her and you'll get to know her real well because she's a special talent. And then our offense, like I said last year, that was one of our strengths of our team is our ability to score runs. And, you know, we have Cagle who hits, Marissa Gambarda, Cami Pereira is having a great start to the season. Casey Bigham's another one that is in the bottom part of our lineup that has been a huge spark plug for us. And then we have Ansley Gilstrap, who was scheduled to be our starting shortstop last year and was out with a season-ending injury. And she's back and starting to find her groove. So we have a lot of versatility within our lineup. We have some speed. We have some power. We have kids that you know, really compete at the plate. And then we have some depth. We have some kids that can come off the bench and produce. So for a young team to kind of put those pieces together, it's pretty special.
Coach, a couple of quick observations. And, again, we always appreciate the time. Number one, next time you play Virginia Tech, quit hitting it to left field. I saw more Hall of Fame catches in that series with the Virginia Tech left fielder. I know after a while you're like, for crying out loud, what in the world's going on with that? And issue number two is – hitting in the triple plays is not good. That is what I absolutely positively know about women's softball. The triple play is not your best friend when you got a bat in your hand.
Well, let me tell you, I take pride in base running, and I tell our team all the time, hey, base running can win us games or it can lose us games. And, you know, in fast pitch softball, the bases are 60 feet away, and sometimes a ball is hit just, you know, right at somebody, and it's very quick, and things happen. And certainly we're going to work on preventing that in the future. But hitting into a triple play is a huge downer and a huge momentum shifter. But we're going to learn from that mistake and hopefully not happen again. It's happened twice in my career. My first year as a head coach, it happened. And I was like, God, I hope that never happens again, because that's a rough call. And that was kind of on me, because we had runners at first and second, and I gave a hit and run, and we lined into the triple play. And this one, it was just kind of we had a left-handed slapper at the plate. Their middle infield's pulled in, and the girl caught the ball about an inch off the ground, tagged a runner through to first, and, a big momentum shifter.
Well, you got the W. That's the bottom line. But keep up the great work.
That's it.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. We're excited to get on with the season, and appreciate you having me on this morning.
Absolutely. John Rittman is the head coach of Clemson's softball program. We wish him and his team all the best. Thanks again, Coach. Appreciate it. Don't forget, we got a lot of sports for you coming up on ACC Network. Pack and I were counting them off yesterday. I think we're up to about a dozen total we can show you sometime here in the next month if we're not careful. Women's lacrosse grabs the stage Friday afternoon, 12:30, Southern California and Boston College. And then at 6 o'clock, number 8 Duke and number 1 North Carolina. Women's lacrosse right here on ACC Network. All right, when we come back, we're going to pivot to another sport. Paige Madden and Virginia are at it again. The Cavaliers are awesome in the pool on the ladies' side. We will talk to Paige next about their great success this past weekend next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday morning. Our next guest joined us about a year ago.
Yeah.
She had just dominated the ACC Swim Championships again. And so Paige has decided, when I get done taking care of this, I'll join those two knuckleheads in the morning on the show. So Paige Madden has returned from the University of Virginia. Paige, first of all, good morning. Great seeing you again. And congratulations, another successful ACC championship.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Does this one feel any different, or does it just get to be, it's old school, that's what we do?
I mean, given the circumstances, it definitely feels different. I'd say it's probably, it almost feels more satisfying just because of everything that our team has gone through this past year, just with COVID and everything. It's been a pretty tough year, so it's definitely different.
Paige, we have talked to so many different student athletes over a variety of sports from back in the summer through the fall and now certainly into the winter. What's been the biggest challenge to swimmers in this social distance, testing, you know, travel, all type thing, competing world that you're in?
I think just, you know, trying to stay as healthy as possible and follow all the protocols. It's not easy to social distance every day and to just try and stay as safe as possible. That's definitely the biggest challenge. That being said, our team is pretty big. If you count men and women, there's about 60 mm-hmm. people on our team. So that works in our favor just because that's, you know, 60 people that we can hang out with. But I think it is hard to, you know, try to restrict the amount of people that we see outside of the team and throughout the university.
Paige, it's going to be a strange question. So if it's totally bizarre, you can blow it off and I'll be completely fine with it. But the fact that you get in the water, which could in some respects be like a different world, was that like a blessing in disguise that when you can get away from the headaches of what everybody's been going through with COVID and trying to stay, you know, socially distanced. But when you get in the water, it just seems like, hey, I'm in now a natural environment where it's just me and nothing else but my thoughts. Does that make any sense whatsoever?
Yeah, no, it totally does. And I think you're right. It is like an oasis almost. And it's pretty nice just because, obviously we can't wear a mask in the water. So it's nice to not have to worry about that. When you are on the wall during practice, so like you have to like be, conscious and try to stay 6 feet apart. But, yeah, it's pretty nice just because, you know, swimming is the same, with or without COVID. And yeah, you're right. It is pretty peaceful when you're just like by yourself. All you can hear is the water around you. It's pretty nice.
All right. So you guys have had such success as a team. And again, I go back to this because I'm fascinated and I always have been about the psychology of an individual sport and a team concept. Take me through separating those barriers, and yet here we are, American records, national records, all sorts of things you guys are accomplishing. What take the comprehensive nature of the team here, what's that mean to you now?
I mean, it means everything. Especially this being my last year. I'm just really trying to enjoy everything and take it all in and not try to focus so much on myself. And so, yeah, seeing things like an American record, the first night of the meet, things like that, it definitely just really inspires you and inspires the entire team. And that's really special to see. And it's just special to be a part of that and just know, like, those are some of my best friends and they're doing amazing things. And like, that's really, really cool.
So you picked up 5 gold medals. Do you stack those things up like tag-alongs and Girl Scout cookies? I mean, how do you display all the medals that you get with this?
It's funny that you asked that because I actually have my phone propped up on them right now because I didn't have anything else to
Wait, hold on. We got to see the medal. Hey, Pac, we got to mess with the phone. I know we set the shot up and everything, but come on, let's see the medals now. I mean, you're holding the phone up with the medals. That's awesome.
I have one right here.
All right,
chill. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, let me see one of these.
All right, let's see one.
Oh, those are cool.
Wow. Ooh. Yeah. Paige, how many you got? How many of those you got?
I have no idea. I've given a couple of them away.
Oh, you're kidding.
Okay, well, wait. Hang on. So let me ask this question. Have you won so many? Pac, why don't you show Paige some of the things we've been given by people who've been, like, really successful? Because, you know, there's some people who win so many things like you do, Paige, that they just decide to part with them and send them to us, and we put them in the basement.
Yeah, Rachel Kane.
Oh, wow.
This is from the U.S. Women's Amateur at Pinehurst number 2. And Rachel Kane won so many of them, she started giving them away like you do. Just like they are tag-alongs from the Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah.
So she sent one of us to put down here in the studio that I put right here on the top for good luck for every show. Before every show, I rub this gold coin to make sure that we're still employed. And so far, after 327 attempts, we're still rocking. So, yeah, we got stuff like that.
So, Paige,
Here's something you can appreciate, Paige. This is from Dave Dorn, the NC State football coach, that when their team offensive lineman knocked down somebody on the defensive side, they called a pancake block, so they give out pancake syrup awards. So we figured, you know, and you can appreciate this because I'm sure after a nice swim, there's nothing better than carving up on some pancakes, right? That's probably a go-to.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So this is the kind of stuff we got in here. Not quite gold medals like you've got, but you know what? We're gaining on it.
Cool.
There you go. So if you ever run out of people to give stuff to, Paige, you could always send us one. I mean, you are a show veteran with Packer and Durham now. I mean, you could drop one in the mail to us or something like that. Now, I know you got other people, but I'm just saying, you know, you want to be, you know, honored in the basement. That's one of the things we can pull off.
All right.
Okay. Well, so let me ask the tricky question. How does the Nationals work? Because, you know, a year ago, we kind of lost all that in college athletics. We lost everything postseason. You guys had gotten to this point, been really successful, and then all of a sudden, we never got that last piece. What are you thinking about it? What do you want to know about it? How does it impact what you want to do as an individual, let alone your team, which obviously has had great success?
Yeah, I think the ACC is kind of at an advantage when it comes to NCAAs just because they're holding it at the same place that they held ACCs. So we're kind of familiar with the pool, with the protocols, you know, it looks different because there's no spectators. So we're all sitting in the spectator seating. We have to do event check-ins, wear masks on the podium. When it comes to relays, we're a lane apart. So we're not right next to each other like normal. So I think that kind of works to our advantage, and is something that I'm grateful for, that we had ACCs at the same place that we had, that we're having NCAAs. That being said, like from a swimming standpoint, I think the main difference is that it's a lot more intense competition when it comes to nationals, just because, you know, it's people from all over the country rather than just your conference, and it's the best of the best. And, you know, we also get to see people that we never get to see, you know, teams like from the West Coast. We don't get to compete against them even in a normal year throughout the year. So that's pretty exciting. It's also nerve-wracking, but it's something that I'm looking forward to.
One last thing, awesome. Kinesiology major, everything going okay with school? I mean, I know we talk about the mental aspect with sports, but, you know, at the University of Virginia, we're not cutting any corners academically. So is everything good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm taking a reduced course load this semester, which is pretty nice, just because it's my last semester and I had enough credits to do that. So it's nice to kind of take a backseat in regards to school and focus on swimming and doing stuff outside of the pool. So
good for you. Yeah. You're supposed to,
you know what
it.
Else you can do too, right, Pac? You can sit around and count all your medals.
You know,
Paige, you're great. Congratulations.
You know you're having success when you do television interviews and you balance your phone with your gold medals.
With gold
you
medals.
Know that life is it. Pretty yeah. good, right? You know life is good.
Yeah.
It's good
yeah.
seeing you again. Glad life's treating you well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Paige Madden, one of the Virginia swimming stars for the Cavaliers. Multi-time ACC champion, All-American, and really a hope for national honors as well. We appreciate her time. Great to have her back on the show. By the way, the women's NCAA championships in Greensboro start on the 17th of March at the Greensboro Aquatic Center, which is right there, by the way, a beautiful facility right there at the Greensboro Coliseum complex. Stay tuned. Power Hour is coming up. Jericho Helm, St. Louis, Missouri, and NC State will join us. But last night, the word in the league was at Duke. Big 1-5 was getting it done at the rack last night for Coach K and the Blue Devils. We'll get caught up on Duke's win over Syracuse and a night ahead in the ACC next on Packer and Durham.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.